I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. In the last couple of days, the Sarah T. Hughes Center for Field Politics at Goucher College released the results of a poll in which they asked voters who they support in the race for governor and other races, and what issues they think are the most important for Maryland voters. The headline, Larry Hogan leads Ben Jealous by a whopping 22 points. But when it comes to issues that Ben Jealous has made central to his campaign, like Medicare for All or increasing the minimum wage, voters side with him by large margins. Today on Midday, a look behind the headlines with Malia Cromer, who directs the Hughes Center, and Luke Broadwater of the Baltimore Sun. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick reviews Sweeney Todd at Rep Stage in Washington. Midday starts right after these headlines. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Before we begin today, there is breaking news out of Harford County. The AP and the Baltimore Sun are reporting that authorities in Harford County say that multiple people have been shot at the Enterprise Business Park. That's in Aberdeen in Northeast Maryland. The FBI is describing this as an active shooter situation. Jane Miller from Channel 11, WBAL Television, about 20 minutes ago, 25 minutes ago, said that a law enforcement source tells her that the shooting suspect is a woman. She has been taken to the hospital. There are multiple people who have been killed and wounded. The number is less than 10. There are a number of tenants in that business park up in Aberdeen. They include a warehouse for Rite Aid drug stores, a freight line company, a company called True Air, another one called The Clorox Company, and a paper and food service. That's according to the Baltimore Sun. This is the third active shooter incident that we have experienced here in Maryland since last March. There was one in St. Mary's County at Great Mills High School. Of course, the Capital Gazette shooting in Annapolis in June, and now in Aberdeen. So we will, of course, continue to monitor and cover this situation for you. But I did want to mention this breaking news from Aberdeen. Our subject today are polls that were released by Goucher College on Tuesday and Wednesday, which revealed some really interesting contradictory preferences among Maryland voters. Governor Larry Hogan enjoys a sizable lead in his bid to be reelected, but several of the ideas espoused by his Democratic opponent, Ben Jealous, also enjoy wide support. An increase in the minimum wage, Medicare for All, and increasing funding for education are all popular and have all been central tenets of the Jealous campaign since the former head of the NAACP announced his candidacy more than a year ago. But the governor remains very popular as well, with an approval rating of about 66%. That's one of the highest for any governor in the country. Malia Cromer is the director of the Sarah T. Hughes Field Politics Center at Goucher. The center conducted the poll among 831 voters between the 11th of September and the 16th of September. She joins us here in Studio A along with Luke Broadwater. He reports on politics and other issues for the Baltimore Sun. Welcome to you both. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Good afternoon.
And listeners, if you would like to be part of our conversation, we'd be delighted to have you weigh in. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org to drop us a tweet at @MiddayWYPR, and you can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. So a couple of little background things, Malia, before we get into these numbers. 831, is that a standard number? I know that the Gonzales poll, which came out in August, used about roughly the same number of folks. So who, because people are, you know, as you well know, people just get generally suspicious of polls. And of course, polls have been wrong. Sometimes they're right, sometimes. But tell us how this thing's structured. How do you decide the number and who you're going to call?
So it's not just 831 just people. It's 831 randomly selected Marylanders. So we start with a random sample of Marylanders, both cell phones and landlines. About 80% of our sample is drawn from cell phones now because more and more people have a cell phone-only household. And so you call a random sample of individuals, and when you end up with around 831, I can say with 95% certainty that the results of any given survey number, like the right track, wrong direction number, will be within 3.5 percentage points. So it's not just 831 individuals. It's 831 randomly sampled individuals from a stratified random sample of both cell phones and landlines of Maryland at large.
Yeah, because the cell phone question is one that people continue to bring
all the time.
Right. And you can, in fact, with pretty high level of confidence, extrapolate what these 831 people think to the 2 million plus residents of the state of Maryland.
It's just like soup sampling, right? You don't need to eat the entire pot to tell me that the pot is spicy. You just need one spoonful. And so public opinion polls, since they started doing this, even in 2016, where everybody likes to discredit the few statewide polls that were off, they correctly predicted the outcome of the general, the entire vote. So Hillary Clinton actually did win. She didn't win the Electoral College, but she won the popular vote, and all the polls suggested that would happen.
All right. Speaking of soup, there are those who say that Ben Jealous is in the soup, and he has really got an insurmountable lead by Governor Hogan to overcome. So this number, it's 22 points that Governor Hogan, by this reckoning, leads Mr. Jealous. How does that compare to where Jealous was a month ago, 3 months ago?
So I think it's also important when you think about polls, they capture snapshots in time. They're not necessarily predicting the future. And so right now, we were in the field the week before the Jealous campaign released their first television ad post-primary. And so what we've had is an entire summer of an onslaught from the Republican Governors Association, as well as Larry Hogan, blanketing the airwaves with anti-Jealous ads. And so if you look at the Gonzales poll, which measured in August, about 16 points, nothing has really happened from the Jealous campaign in terms of their, full-scale television advertising from then until the Goucher poll. And if anything, I think that Larry Hogan has been able to put a little bit more distance between himself and Jealous through, again, a campaign that's well-funded. He has $9 million compared to the Ben Jealous campaign, which at the last reporting had less than $1 million cash on hand.
And Luke Broadwater, the cash on hand number is also a number that everybody is paying attention to. Ben Jealous was on this program just a couple of days ago, and he seems very confident, and he brushed that aside. He said Hogan's running his campaign, and the Jealous campaign is running their campaign, and they are different campaigns.
Well, sure. They are indeed different campaigns. But as Dr. Cromer rightly points out, when you have $9 million more dollars than someone else, you can have a much larger impact and influence on an election. If Ben Jealous is right to point to parts of the poll that show his policies are quite popular, the problem is Larry Hogan can drown out that message quite easily with money. And if Ben Jealous, I know a lot of people who think if you don't have $1 million in the bank, you can't even run a statewide campaign. He had less than 400,000. So they really need to ramp up that fundraising operation. People think it's gross to talk about money in politics. It shouldn't be, but that's the reality. And like it or not, you can win an election with advertising, and that's what Larry Hogan is currently doing.
And, of course, I suppose it's possible that those numbers that you've come up with, Malia, might be different had that poll been taken after some of the Jealous ads ran. He's got a very positive, sort of introducing Ben to the world ad coming on, or that's currently on. But even that, it's not going to blanket the airwaves the way that the Hogan ads are blanketing.
Right. So he is running against, not just the ads as well. He's running against a popular incumbent. So a popular incumbent with full statewide name recognition. And yet there's certainly a lot of folks in the state, particularly Democrats and particularly Democrats who pay attention, who know about Ben Jealous, who know about all of his policy positions. But there's a lot of people who don't. And I think that's also reflected in the number. So you're right. People support the minimum wage. People have favorable opinions towards Medicare for all. But are they connecting those policy issues with the Jealous campaign? Doesn't look like it right now. And so that, I think, is an important. It's about statewide name recognition. It's about going against a popular incumbent. It's about having the money to spread your message.
And, of course, Luke Broadwater, Ben Jealous had to survive a very crowded primary field. He had spent a bunch of money to win that race. That was a race that nobody expected him, or very few people expected him to win. Rashearn Baker really, by the time the week of the election came along, was considered the front runner, I think, by a lot of folks. They might have thought it was close, but
sure.
People really thought that, a first time elected, running for office for the elective office for the first time, as Mr. Jealous was, in the age of Trump, where an experience in government experience was put at a premium. Here's a guy that didn't have any government experience, and Mr. Baker ran a county. If he could run a county, he could run a state. Ben Jealous beat him by 10 points.
Right. Yeah. Ben Jealous did outperform some of the early polling. But I will say the later polls in the primary, we had him tied in the Baltimore Sun poll, him and Baker. The Post had him up. So you could see that coming in the final month. You could see the Jealous surge coming. Right now, what you see is a Hogan surge from an already big lead. And we haven't seen any indication that's going to change. So, I mean, he's in a much different situation. He had positive momentum in the primary, and right now he has negative momentum.
In Florida, Andrew Gillum, who won his primary to be the Democratic nominee for governor, that was considered a surprise by a lot of people. And the day after that primary, he raised $1 million, Malia Cromer. Ben Jealous is having difficulty raising money now. It's interesting. Some people point to his choice of Susan Turnbull as his running mate, very connected to the Democratic National Committee, former chair of the Maryland Democratic Committee. And I think maybe there was an assumption that, she would be very useful and helpful in fundraising.
So while I do see the comparison with the race in Florida. I can see that parallel being drawn. I think an important thing to note, though, is that in Florida, there's a very Trump Republican running against him. And so that it just creates a completely different political dynamic. So yes, I think Ben Jealous and Gillum might share some really similar policy views and perspectives, but I don't think that Larry Hogan's, can't draw a straight line between Larry Hogan and his Republican challenger in Florida. And that creates a different dynamic, particularly for the Democratic voters who make up a majority of the state. When our poll has shown in this poll and other polls, the majority of Marylanders view Larry Hogan as a moderate and they don't connect him with the president.
And Luke Broadwater, in terms of the Democratic Party and the cohesion that Ben Jealous has been able to achieve post-primary, there's always a little bit of a dance after, you've got a hard-fought primary with 8 or 9 people. Has he been able to bring people together? Because there are folks who are saying that perhaps not, that, for example, other candidates often contribute money from their political fundraising if they're not going to need it. People like Elijah Cummings, who's, got a race that most folks think he's going to win pretty easily. He has given some money to the Jealous campaign and a few others, but there's a long list of people who have not. What does that indicate?
There hasn't been a lot of help for Ben Jealous. I mean, we've talked about Larry Hogan's already huge financial advantage. He's got a unified party. There may be some on the far right, big Trump people who are holding their noses but still supporting Hogan. He's got the RGA coming to his aid in a way.
The Republican Governors Association. They spent $2 million on their advertising.
$2.2 million. And Ben Jealous hasn't received hardly any outside help at all. He's not receiving a lot of inside help. Democrats are endorsing him, but some aren't. Even some leaders of big counties and well-known state senators, and
the Comptroller of Maryland.
The Comptroller of Maryland. So you have a situation here where the tepidness that you're seeing in leading Democrats is also reflected in the voting sample, which, the poll showed.
And we should mention, and Mr. Jealous and I did speak about this briefly on Tuesday, this ad that the Republican Governors Association ran, edited video from a Jealous appearance on MSNBC, in which they have him saying, "Sure, you can call me a socialist," without airing the second part of his statement, which was, "But I'm not. I'm a venture capitalist." And, they even filed a suit with the FCC about, truth in advertising. So whether or not these ads are truthful from the Hogan campaign, he's got one out about the Hogan lockbox. This is an idea that wasn't necessarily his to begin with, was it not?
No, it was not his to begin with. Um, but But he's also the governor of the state. And when they're passing, that's the power of the incumbency. And I think a lot of people forget that when they talk about this race, that Larry Hogan is no longer some sort of upstart Republican that, you know, won in an election that nobody expected back in 2014. You know, he is now an incumbent who has sustained positive approval ratings across Marylanders for the last 3.5 years, and who is sitting on a huge campaign war chest. And so, yes, he gets to command sort of the messaging of the good things that have been happening in the state during his tenure. A lot of those good things are certainly associated with the work the Democrats and the Maryland General Assembly has been doing. But he also, as the incumbent governor, gets to talk about them.
And he's running Luke Broadwater as Mr. Bipartisanship. Right. And this is he points to those kinds of things. I mean, we should mention that this education lockbox, which is money from gambling, there was a proposal by Maggie McIntosh to make a constitutional amendment to force essentially the legislature to earmark that money for education. When that proposal was offered, Mr. Hogan thought it'd be a better idea to have it as a matter of statute, as a mm-hmm. matter of law, rather than in the Constitution. You know, it didn't end up being that way. It, in fact, will be on the ballot coming up in November, and people are expected. It's expected that it will pass. He's done a pretty good job of positioning himself as a moderate person who is all about bipartisanship.
Sure. And he has, I think one thing that really surprised many people in the poll was how Larry Hogan has stolen issues that are typically Democratic issues. When you see a Republican who is better trusted and has more confidence on the issues of education and health care over a Democrat who's running on those issues, yeah. I mean, that shows you the power of that advertising campaign. You're right. The education lockbox. He did have one too, but it wasn't his that passed. It's not his that's on the ballot. That's the Democrats' proposal. But he's calling it the Hogan lockbox and ads.
Which he has every right to do, I suppose, because it happened and he signed the bill, you know.
And he didn't need to sign the bill. Yeah. It was going on the ballot without a signature. He signed it even though he didn't have to. I think so he could run a Hogan lockbox ad mm-hmm. and brand himself as the education governor. And I see that ad all the time. I've probably seen that ad 3 times just yesterday. So, So, yeah, I mean, he's stealing issues that are normally in the Democratic wheelhouse, and voters are buying it. So
you watch too much TV, bro.
And he would probably argue that one man's stealing is another man's bipartisanship.
Sure.
And
exactly.
That's exactly the spin that they're putting on this issue.
And I asked them that. They're the Democrats at a press call where they were very upset about this. And I said, you know, when Mayor Pugh signs a bill from Brandon Scott or Ryan Dorsey that she may have disagreed with early on but comes to agree with in the end, she takes credit for those things. Why can't Larry Hogan?
Absolutely.
So this is
the way
the
game
is played.
Yeah. Absolutely. Going to take a quick break, and we will come back and take some of your calls and comments. Malia Cromer directs the Sarah T. Hughes Field Politics Center at Goucher College. Luke Broadwater is an award-winning reporter for the Baltimore Sun. More on Maryland politics when we come back at 410-662-8780. Midday at WIPR.org is our email. At Midday, WIPR is our Twitter handle. To follow me on Twitter, it's at Tom Hall, WIPR. You can also catch us on the WIPR Facebook page. We're back in 90 seconds. See you then. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, my guest will be the acclaimed historian Doris Kearns Goodwin. Her latest book is a synthesis of the work that she's done throughout her career. Abraham Lincoln, Theodore Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, and Lyndon Johnson all left an indelible mark on the country, and Doris Kearns Goodwin has written seminal books on all of them. So tomorrow on Midday, a conversation about how these presidents handled adversity and became such iconic figures in our history. It's called Leadership in Turbulent Times. We'll talk about this new book by Doris Kearns Goodwin tomorrow with Miss Goodwin on Midday. Coming up later today, Sweeney Todd is playing at Rep Stage over in Washington, and our theater critic J. Wynn Russick will have a review. But now we return to our conversation about Maryland politics and the latest poll about the governor's race and other issues in this midterm election with Luke Broadwater of the Baltimore Sun and Malia Cromer of the Sarah T. Hughes Field Politics Center up at Goucher College. Our number 410-662-8780. Our email midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle @MiddayWYPR. And we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. Let's go to Julia, who's calling from Baltimore. Welcome to the show. Thanks for calling. Julia, are you there?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Why don't you turn off your radio? I tell you what, Julia, we'll give you a second to get yourself together. Turn off your radio, and we'll come back to you in just a minute. Malia Cromer, I want to ask you about the thing that Luke mentioned just before the break, and that is the level of trust in your poll that voters showed for, you ask them who would they trust more to handle certain issues, health care, education. And these are central tenets of Mr. Jealous's campaign, yet Mr. Hogan is the one that voters appear to trust more to handle those.
And I think this speaks to the differential of name recognition between the two candidates and the voters' ability to tie the central tenets of the campaign to the individual candidate themselves. So we did ask about that. We asked about their confidence to handle economic issues, healthcare, as well as education. And Hogan best Jealous against all three, particularly among economic issues, which is really, I don't think, a huge surprise there, because that's a big part of Hogan's messaging.
How about the issues in general that voters identified as being most important to them?
It's economic issues. And that I think that is the biggest sort of, if thinking about the disconnect again between like sort of policy issues that people like and the way they're voting. Another underlying message of the poll is that taxes matter too. In our first poll, we found that there's a majority of Marylanders who still think they're taxed too much in the state. And so Hogan has been able to, I think, paint Ben Jealous as somebody who's going to raise taxes. And so while Marylanders might like all like some of these different policy proposals, you know, particularly associated with health care, if they're afraid of an increased tax burden, that might be tempering sort of their support.
And Mr. Jealous does have a very detailed plan about reducing the sales tax by 0.25%. And you know, if you can read all about it on the website, it's there.
Sure.
Let's try a take two with Julia.
Unfortunately, he undercut his own message at that press conference by then saying he would consider raising it later. So anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Yes. Julia, let's try this again. How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Great. So what's on your mind?
Well, my comment is I learned about Ben Jealous when I got my sample ballot, the first I ever heard of the man. And if he had been running for months before that, I never heard anything about him.
Okay, well, thanks for that comment. I appreciate it. But Luke Broadwater, the other day when I spoke with Mr. Jealous, he said campaigns are always a contest between organized money and organized people. They announced today, the Jealous campaign, that they have this wide network of people going out to get out the vote. He is relying in many ways on the same kind of strategy that, for example, Stacey Abrams in Georgia is running on, saying we're not going to try to convince Republicans to vote for us. We're not even necessarily going to concentrate too much on independent voters. We're simply going to go after the Democrats who are registered at a 2-to-1 margin in this state, and we're going to get them out to vote, particularly folks who have not been voting in prior elections.
Right. And that is the strategy to win as a Democrat. There are more Democrats in Maryland. It's 2-to-1. And if you can get them out to the polls in numbers that mirror presidential years, I think Democrats are pretty much unbeatable in that situation. You would never even think about Maryland going for the Republican candidate for governor in a presidential year. It would be unheard of. That said, it's really hard to do. I mean, Democrats don't vote at the same rates in off-year elections. And there's actually been a trend for lower amounts of voting every off-year election cycle. So I think people do expect a blue wave this year, but will it be a blue ripple or a blue tsunami? And, you know, I think you had, what, a 4 or 6% increase in Democratic turnout in your model. You know, they really need like a 20 or 25% increase to achieve their
More
goals.
Democrats did vote in this primary, Malia, right? And nationally, Alan Greenblatt writes in Governing Magazine that Democratic primary turnout across the country is up 64%. Mm-hmm. So does that translate into a general election turnout? One would think that it probably would. If they're that engaged in the primary, what would keep them out of the general election? But when it comes to, for example, nationalizing this election, this is another thing that Mr. Jealous tries to do, which is to associate Mr. Trump with Mr. Hogan. How do voters feel about that?
they've been, it's not just the Jealous campaign. The Democrats in Maryland have been trying to sort of thread the needle between Hogan and Trump since the minute that Donald Trump won election in 2016. And our numbers have consistently shown that people really do not associate. They think that Larry Hogan has created an appropriate amount of distance from the president. Again, they view Larry Hogan as a moderate. They patently dislike Donald Trump. So Donald Trump's disapproval rating among Maryland Democrats is 95%. It's a ridiculously high number. And they just don't share the same sentiment as they do toward the governor.
A couple of comments on Twitter. One says it's still early in the polling, but it points out the work that Jealous needs to do, which is to ask, what do you want or who do you want in charge of redistricting after the 2020 census? Because, you know, in fact, the legislature and the governor will take up redistricting. And Mr. Hogan has had a proposal to revise the way districts are determined, a commission rather than by the legislature. So that's a good point from Twitter that, you know, who do you trust to handle redistricting the best way? We also heard from our good friend Anthony McCarthy, a former host on WEAA radio and a very politically astute gentleman here in Baltimore in Maryland politics. He says it may be anecdotal, but I talked to a lot of black voters who are engaged in the process, and I've been surprised by the number of African Americans who are supporting the reelection of the Republican incumbent. What does this poll say about black voters?
It's showing that some of the things he's seeing anecdotally are reflected in our numbers. And so, listen, I always caution people to make any sort of broad generalizations looking at just sort of a subsample. But there has been some significant inroads that Larry Hogan has made in comparison to other Republicans among African-American voters. So if you look at the percent of African-American voters that Democrats like Brian Frosch and Democrats like Ben Cardin are getting, it is significantly higher than what you see with Ben Jealous. And so not that Ben Jealous isn't winning among African-Americans, he is, but Larry Hogan is making those inroads. And that's the whole kind of the name of the game. So Larry Hogan doesn't need to win Baltimore City. He needs to make inroads in Baltimore City. He needs to stop Ben Jealous from having a landslide here. He needs to stop Ben Jealous from having a landslide in Prince George's County. And he needs to do really well in Baltimore County. And so it's that sort of numbers game that needs to play out as well.
Yeah, the irony of that is amazing that the former president and CEO of the NAACP still does not enjoy almost total black support. I mean, it's kind of, who would have thought that?
Yeah. What did your poll show, 35% or so?
Something
it's a
like
subset.
That, yeah.
Well, it's interesting because I went on a crime walk with Ben Jealous and Mayor Pugh in West Baltimore a couple weeks ago. And it was very clear to me that people knew Mayor Pugh and wanted to come up and talk to her. And people didn't really know Ben Jealous. And I think that's a matter of him not having the same kind of name recognition. And the Jealous campaign will say is an opportunity. We get to reintroduce him again now that we're up on the air. We have the debate coming up. But they do have a lot of work to do to get him better known.
And I'll point out to this. So it's really not that much of a surprise to me. If you look at our polling numbers over the last 3 years, Larry Hogan has done well with African-Americans in terms of his approval rating. And so they're familiar with the governor. A large percent of African-Americans have approved of the job he's doing. And it's not, I think, a function of it's a function more so of Jealous's name recognition. And so I think he's correct when he says that. When these voters hear, learn my story, know who I am, hear about me, I think that that is an area which he can make significant, break apart that coalition, significant inroads.
And that's, again, a perception thing, which is interesting because I talked to a lot of Democrats, operatives in various other campaigns for down ballot races, who say, look, there's a big case to be made that Larry Hogan has been very unsupportive of the city of Baltimore, which has obviously a majority black population. The decision to cancel the red line, the slow pace of progress on State Center, they bring this up all the time. When I brought those issues up with the lieutenant governor, who's an African-American, Boyd Rutherford, who was here last month, he bristled at the notion that, they'd been bad for black voters. We didn't put it in those particular terms, but he says, for example, his answer about the red line was that the bus system has been improved, and there's a lot of people, I think, that might take issue with that.
And the jury's still out on that one.
Yeah.
But I do think these numbers that we're seeing, not only in your poll, but the Gonzalez poll, where Larry Hogan is basically tied in Prince George's County and Baltimore, and in your poll, winning in the D.C. suburbs, I have a hard time believing that that will stay that way. I think Democrats will come home by Election Day, much as Republicans did for Donald Trump. And I can see that shifting a lot. Even if people are answering that question that way now, that could definitely change in the next 2 months.
Right. Yeah. I actually don't think that 22% is going to hold whatsoever by Election Day. I mean, I actually agree with Ben Jealous's pollster, Fred Yang, who came out when they released their internal poll early this summer, that said that he suspected that there would be a large margin between Hogan and Jealous, and then it would narrow as we came towards Election Day. And I think that we will certainly see a narrowing. But this gives us a good benchmark to actually judge how much it will narrow.
Catherine writes on email, I'm not a strong advocate of Ben Jealous, but at this point, I just don't trust Larry Hogan. He will be a lame duck governor if elected. And that's true because, of course, he will be term limited. This will be a second term. Then he will have no reason to listen to voters since he won't be dependent on their vote in the future. He switched his stance on fracking due to voter input. But why should he continue that pattern? Luke Broadwater, would one expect a different Larry Hogan in a second term?
Well, I think she's making the case both ways. There's a fear among Democrats that Larry Hogan will become much more right wing in a second term. He won't be tethered to the voters anymore as he is now. That said, everything we've seen about Larry Hogan, whether you like this way of governing or not, is if there are popular policies, he tends to gravitate towards them. So when he sees a poll that a fracking ban is popular, even if he was against it before, he has tended to shift to things that the majority of voters want. So he would need to undergo a political transformation in a second term that he has shown that no indication of so far.
Oh, and keep in mind, I mean, this is a state that's most likely going to reelect, Brian Frosch, going to reelect Ben Cardin, and going to reelect a heavily Democratic legislature, probably still, perhaps even with a veto-proof majority. So that power will certainly always be checked. And I don't think that any politician, any governor who has any sort of aspirations, potentially or otherwise, wants to end up or take the Chris Christie path. So that's the comparison you see Democrats make. If you want to see Larry Hogan's second term, they always point to Chris Christie. But nobody as a governor wants to have a 17% or below approval rating.
Yeah, that's just not fun to talk about at dinner with the family. Let's go to Midday. Cosette, or let's go to the phones, rather. You're already here on Midday. We don't have to go anywhere to get to Midday. Cosette, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling.
And thank you for taking my call. I was listening, and I think you're underestimating Baltimore a little bit of our love for Larry Hogan. During the riots, I'm a Columbia resident, but during the riots, he came. He's a person. and we hear about Larry Hogan not just when it's time for election. We hear about him. And let's be honest, the red line was way, way, way sluggish before he even became governor. When you think of Ben Jealous, unfortunately, there's division there. We connect him with the NAACP, and Baltimore and Maryland is just not African-American. And I say this as an African-American woman. Kudos to Ben Jealous. Maybe he'll find another route. His message should be a little bit more universal. But Larry Hogan is... We connect with Larry Hogan. We love Larry Hogan. So I think you're underestimating the love that Baltimore and the love of Democrats have for Larry Hogan.
All right. Well, thanks for that comment, because I really appreciate it. We have an email from Fergal who says, I've been knocking on doors of Democratic voters in Baltimore County since last April. I don't often talk to voters about the governor's race, so one would assume he's perhaps canvassing for Johnny O, who's running for county executive. I don't know that, but that's my guess. But he says, I've yet to meet a Democratic voter who told me they are voting for Hogan. So Fergal has not met Cosette, for example. Hogan's approval ratings are high because he's doing a decent job, but I don't get the impression many Democrats are going to vote for his reelection because they prefer Ben Jealous. I could be just seeing what I want to see to be true, but I'd be cautious interpreting approval ratings when the polls don't ask who people intended to vote for. But you did ask who's
intended.
Yeah. Yeah, and when it comes to approval rating, I clocked it in at about 66%. Is that right? That's actually a little lower than it used to be. It was in the 70s at one point.
It has kicked up into the 70s. I will say this is the best way to describe his approval rating. It's been an average mid-60s since he took office.
Mm-hmm. It's actually been very constant. It's almost amazing how consistent it's been. No matter what he's done after his first year in office, it's always been within that sort of margin of error. Mm-hmm. So people have a very set view of Larry Hogan. You're not going to tell them a whole lot of things they don't already know about him. So, I mean, the voters are fixed in their view of Larry Hogan.
Yeah, and I think our producers are reminding me that Cosette made the comment that, or somehow indicated that Baltimore is not a majority African-American city, but of course it is.
Right.
You know, at this point 4 years ago, Malia, Larry Hogan was 20-some points behind Anthony Brown. Are there any parallels between his come-from-behind victory over Brown and a possibility of a jealous come-from-behind victory over Hogan?
I don't know if there's a lot of parallels to be drawn there. That was an open seat, which I think makes it fundamentally different than it is now. And you have such a disproportion in money. And while Anthony Brown had a lot of money too, not this much.
It was like 4-1 or 5-1, not 24-1.
That's
and
right.
That makes a big difference. I mean, money doesn't win elections by itself, right? I mean, Marilyn Mosby's won elections being lesser funded. Larry Hogan has. But when the disparity is that great, you can really drown out the other person, and that's what we're seeing.
There was this big kerfluffle about the number of debates. Pam Wood, your colleague at the Baltimore Sun, sent out a tweet. Said, you know, they started talking about the jealous campaign wanted 5, Hogan wanted 2, and they settled for 1.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how did that happen? So how did that happen, Luke? Do you know?
Yes.
I didn't get a chance to ask Mr. Jealous that the other day.
I do have some insight on that. So right out of the gate, Larry Hogan accepted 2 debate dates this month in September, one that would have been this past Monday and one this coming Monday, with 2 coalitions of news organizations. Ben Jealous responded, did not accept those dates, but said, I want 5, and added 3 more news organizations, including your own, that he wanted to do a little later next month. Larry Hogan said, no, you're only getting 2, agree to the ones we agreed to. Jealous came back and said, we can't make the first one. We have an important fundraiser that day that we don't want to change. So they were stuck with 1. And from talking to both campaigns, I'm left with this very perplexing take that the voters want more debates. We in the media want more debates. The public wants more debates. And both of the candidates seem kind of happy with 1 because either would have had the opportunity to change schedules or propose something else to actually make those things happen. And neither is doing that.
And, you know, so that means Ben Jealous on next Monday night has 60 minutes to introduce himself to the number of people who apparently don't even really know a whole lot about him.
Yes, that is exactly what it means. And so I think his debate performance will be really important. I do think it will probably increase the amount of people who tune in to watch. But debates aren't just important for that night and the viewership that night. They're important for, I think, the next few days of analysis and sort of spin. A really command performance by Ben Jealous can get him some really positive earned media. But a really bad performance, you know, will do just the opposite.
Yeah. One of the things that struck me, you asked the question, should the governor be more focused on change or ensuring stability? That was interesting. And 47% said change. 36%, 11 points less, said stability. So, you know, we talk about change elections. I mean, is there any reason to believe that the Maryland gubernatorial election is a change election?
I don't know. So I asked this question because I was always fascinated back in 2016 that for the first time, Republicans said that they were looking for change versus experience. That was an interesting thing from Pew Research Center. And I thought it would be kind of interesting to duplicate it here, because in a lot of ways, the incumbent, particularly an incumbent like Larry Hogan, who doesn't, I think, have any huge, big sort of game changing ideas, is more the stability candidate. And Ben Jealous, who wants Medicare for all, increasing the minimum wage, legalization of marijuana, raising teacher salary, all these different things. That's more of a change, I think, a change candidate. But then at the same time, Larry Hogan's whole message is change Maryland. And so I look at those results.
And it's the name of his organization.
Yes. Yeah. And so I'm like, I'm unclear what exactly that's picking up.
Because you saw Republicans for Change, too, and they're obviously supporting Hogan. So when they say change, they're talking about changing the one-party monopoly of the state, and that's what he's doing. When the Democrats say change, they say voting for Ben Jealous, getting out Larry Hogan. So,
and the time has come for me to change topics. We're going to talk about rep stage in Washington in about 90 seconds, so we have to call it quits here. But Malia Cromer, Luke Broadwater, it's always a pleasure, and we shall see you again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Malia Cromer directs the Sarah T. Hughes Field Podcast. Politics Center at Goucher College. Luke Broadwater reports on politics and many other issues for the Baltimore Sun. We will have continuing coverage of all of the big races on the ballot in November, including races for Congress and the U.S. Senate, county executive races, and, of course, the race for governor. The last day to register to vote is October 16th. Early voting begins October 25th. Election Day is November 6th. I will anchor WIPR's election coverage beginning at 8 o'clock that evening. Coming up, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street is back in action at Rep Stage in Washington. Jay Wynn Russick has a review coming right up after a break. I'm Tom Hall. It's Midday. Stay with us.